We start this is now actually part 4 of Shimshon. And what I'd like to do, just plan of action for today. We've already covered the build-up. We've covered what Nazirus means, the different ramifications of the Nazirus. I'd like to cover it today, trying to push forward as much as possible into the Psukim, into Perek Yodalad and Tesvov, the two Prakim that deal with actually the beginning part of his life that we're told. And there are a lot of questions that we need to think about on the spot, and also thematic questions which we're going to just put towards the end. So, we are starting over here in Perek Yodalad, which is page 3. Actually, starting on page 4, we know that Shimshon goes down. He goes down to, it seems like, interestingly, and I looked a little bit into this, the place is called Timna in some places in Sefer Yoshua, but it's called Timnasa over here in this place. He goes to this place called Timnasa, and it seems like the name is used interchangeably in different places.
Doesn't Timnata mean to Timna?
Yeah, but the problem is it's used in three times, not in that context. Meaning Isha Betimnasa, and it talks about I saw a lady in Timnasa, which sounds like it's the name of the place. So the name seems to be the name of the place over here, as opposed to in Sefer Yoshua, where it's just Timna. But that's a point that we dealt with last week. I did look into it. I know that was a little bit of homework. What I would like to start with over here is just to recall. He's seen this lady in Timna, or Timnasa, and he sees her, is attracted to her, says he wants to go marry her. Her parents try to convince him out of it, right? Isn't there anybody you can find among the Jewish girls? There's lots of wonderful options. And he comes back and he says, no, he yashra be'enayim. He pointed out, the last thing we pointed out was that he only responds to his father. His response is only to his father because his mother, it would be, some of the Mepharshim said that it would be too painful for his mother to be able to even understand what's going on over here. Which leads us to understanding why he's doing this. Because when we're reading this psukim, we need to pay careful attention to what is narrative and what is descriptive. Right? So up till now it's described, all it is narrative. We've been talking about him going down, but have we had any judgments on him? Not necessarily. Now, in Pasuk Dalet, which is where we start, he's actually now an external voice, which is a voice now actually judging his actions. So starting at the part of page 4, Va'aviv v'imoy la'yadu ki me'ashem hi. His father and his mother, although they were pained by it, did not know this is from God. Ki to'anahu mevakesh. He was seeking they translate in Machon Mamre, an occasion, but it could also mean to say a complaint, something to be disgruntled about among the Philistim. V'ayzahi, Plishtim moshlim b'Yisrael. In that time, the Plishtim were ruling over Israel. Question for you. What does it mean, ki to'ana hu mevakesh? He is seeking a to'ana. Who is seeking a to'ana? A complaint or justification? Who is the one seeking that?
Shimshon.
Right, so most simply it could be that it's Shimshon, meaning Shimshon has got another agenda over here. Although we see him involved in what seems to be not reputable activities, I mean, he just walks over and sees a non-Jewish lady and suddenly decides he wants to marry her. At the same time, the pasuk seems to be justifying maybe there was something he's seeking out. He's got a plan. He wants to do something with this. This is going to create a complaint, as we see it will. But just bear in mind also that the hu mevakesh, he is seeking, could also mean
God.
Meaning to say, maybe Shimshon is not there with the hidden agenda. Maybe Shimshon is just doing what he wants, but God is perpetuating or creating this the divine plan, or bringing about the divine plan. So that's something we need to think about, and I think it's purposefully ambiguous. Because we're going to see that he's going to become involved in all these really questionable activities, and the question is this deliberate, or is this merely following what he, or following his senses, and Hashem is orchestrating the events around it?
Why? Right. Because it just follows the three words, Ki me Hashem u mevakesh. Ki me Hashem hu kito anah mevakesh. So it's like continuing.
So it might be from Hashem as well, right? So there's a possibility in the Mepharshim go backwards and forwards in that, but I think it's deliberately ambiguous, because we're going to have to always question. This pasuk, I would say, is perhaps the centerpiece of what is going on in this story. The question is Hashem orchestrating the events? Or is Shimshon deliberately creating some sort of refuge or reason to be able to fight against the Plishtim? Okay, so that's something we need to bear in mind throughout. Who is the Humavakesh? Okay? But at least we know that his parents don't know about it. So their concern is obviously going to be from the perspective of parents who care about their child, but whichever way, they don't know what's going on. They don't know the real story, the agenda which is going on over here. Fine, continuing. In Pasuk, okay. Vayered Shimshon v'aviv v'imoy. Again, the verb is vayered. He goes down. Do you notice that this is the second time it's used? The first time that Shimshon goes towards the city of Timnasa, it says vayered Shimshon. He went down. Again, this is going to be a word which is going to come up again and again and again. This is some form of descent, perhaps on a spiritual level as well.
Also, Timna is in the south, so he went down.
Yes and no. Yes and no. The problem is when it comes to Yehuda.
Is that Timna where Timna today is?
You're right, but Timna with Yehuda, it says Vayal Yehuda.
It's not the Timna that is there today in the Negev.
That's with
an ayin.
Well, this is a discussion over here because in Chazal, it might not be a geographic discussion, but they suggest that either it is that there were two Timnas, like you're suggesting, Timna, or it could be that...
that's your name.
Exactly. It could be that there are two Timnas, or it could be that Timna, in fact, was on the slope of a mountain, because we know that Yehuda went up to it, but Shimshon went down to it. So this is a suggestion that it could have been on the slope of a mountain, depending on which direction you're coming from. The Plishtim were down in the Shvela, were in the lower lands. So this could be somewhere on the lower part, the lower reaches. It could just mean as a group. It's a good question. I'm not sure about that. Why is it in singular? Yeah, it could mean as a group. That the unit of them, meaning the threesome, went down. But that's I'm not sure about that point.
Or he went and his father and mother reluctantly went.
Meaning he's leading. Yeah. Okay? That's a good question. Now, Vayavod Karmel Timnasa, they went to the vineyards of Timnasa, Vihine Kfir Ayaros, Arayos Shageg Likrasa. There was a young lion roaring to meet him. Vatitzlach Alav Ruach Hashem, and the Spirit of God succeeded or came upon him, Vayashasau Keshasagadi. And he split it apart. He ripped it into two like he would split apart a goat, which also by itself is no mean feat. Ein biyada. He had no weapon in his hand. He did not tell his parents what happened. Problem. What's missing in these two psukim? What happened to his parents? He's walking down with them, and if we may say that it's a unit, that they're walking down together, that they seem to be leaving at the same time, so how could this incident go on the unawares of his parents to the degree that he doesn't even tell them that it occurred?
Oh, so obviously they were not with him at that time.
Well, okay, so... great, so the...
Yeah, but they were not...
So the psukim actually answer why they're not there. In these psukim, it actually answers why they're not with him. Because where did they... What did they bump into on the way? They were bumped into
the
lion. They bumped into the vineyards of Timnasa. Now, this is important. The Gemara has a phrase which is... Amrina le nazira. They say to a nazir, schor schor, go around a vineyard. Which means to say that even though a nazir could technically walk through a vineyard, there's no problem. It's the problem is eating and imbibing the alcoholic beverages. They say just to be careful, walk around. Don't even go into the vineyard. This is an important rule in terms of education.
Too much temptation.
Too much temptation. You don't know what's going to happen. So it's interesting. So they reach the vineyard, and obviously what happens? Shimshon goes that way, and his parents go through it. So he has to take the longer route. And as he's taking the longer route, what happens? He meets the lion. That's why his parents didn't know about it. So the Malbim suggests it, and the Meforshim suggests this. But what's fascinating about this is just, let's take a step backwards. He is on the way to marry a Philistine girl. And he is being very careful about his Nazirus. Just to be aware of either the irony or also the purposeful agenda of what he's doing, right? This could either show the irony in his lifestyle, that he's very careful about what he does on a spiritual level, but on the level of what he's going to get married to, maybe not as careful, or perhaps this is showing you that his agenda is very clear and precise. Ki toana hu mevakesh, that he has got this hidden agenda, might be that he's got a very clear plan. He's a very careful person who doesn't just do things by chance. Again, we have to think about what's going on here. Just if you think about that in terms of that respect.
Isn't that Toana an excuse in Hebrew?
An excuse or it's sometimes Rashi links it to the complaints in Parshas Baaloscha as well. Right. And so I can show you the exact Rashi. Right. So an excuse But it also is some form of complaint against them, which is effectively acting as the same thing. So so what happens is he kills this lion. They don't know anything about it. It's in the background. Lion imagery is important. Okay, let's keep this in mind. Lion imagery is going to be important for Shimshon. So so what happens over here? He kills this lion. By the way, elsewhere in Tanakh, where do we have killing a lion as a sign of strength? So that's in terms of Yaakov's blessing. Yeah. But where do we have somebody killing a lion being his first stage of strength as a leader? So even earlier than he didn't kill. I don't think he killed the lions. They just didn't eat him. But killing a lion. Remember when David comes to Shaul and he says, "I want to kill Goliath." Right? He says, "I should be the person to go fight a Goliath." Everybody laughs at him. The armor doesn't even fit on him. He can't wear the sword, right? He's so small. So what does he say to Shaul? He says, "Don't worry. I was watching the flocks, the sheep, and I think a bear and a lion attacked me, and I killed them with my bare hands." And that was his argument for why he should be allowed to even fight against Goliath. Okay? Interestingly, that story obviously occurs later. But it is interesting that Shmuel, who's writing about that, knowing that incident, is going to include over here this event. Perhaps this is Hashem's way of showing Shimshon his strength. Perhaps this might be his inauguration as the leader within the context of strength. Something just to think about.
What you said about the staying away from the vineyards, is that how we get all our halachot related to wine to?
Oh, meaning in terms of interrelations with non-Jews, or
right.
in terms of just being careful in general.
Both.
Well, you see, this particular halacha is about not eating wine, which is let's say not being cooked and it's been poured by or touched by a non-Jew. The reason that is there is not as much of our involvement with the wine, but as wine as a connector.
Right.
Socializing to all over here, it's actually intrinsically the wine's a bit of a problem. Mm-hmm. What is more paradigmatic of that, of this idea of walking around the vineyard is, in general, how do we relate to Isser? How do we relate to something which the Torah tells you is Asser? Do you say, okay, until there and exactly till there, or do you say, no, let us just be a little more careful? The Torah has a number of times where the Torah itself tells you, just be a little more careful about doing certain things. So perhaps that might be educationally one approach to which is interesting in general. Maybe not necessarily about wine, but in other areas. I'm trying to think of examples for a second. There's a few examples of this, but for instance, the Torah says, "Lo sikrivu legalos erva." There's certain people that a person cannot have a relationship with. The Torah says, "Don't even come close to," meaning don't get involved in any form of relationships. So there's a number of examples like this, the Torah itself, and of course the rabbi is extended, but the Torah itself uses. So that's interesting.
The fact that he was so careful on a spiritual level, mm-hmm. and wasn't careful with marrying, does that show maybe that Hashem is involved more, that Hashem is orchestrating?
Well, that's exactly the question. Is it because he's just going, right? He's just doing his own thing. Now, Barbanel will say that he, whatever he sees, he does. And Hashem is, in the meantime, making sure everything fits. Or is it, no, he's a very precise individual who's got a very clever plan and there's a reason he's doing this. Which we're going to come back to. I'm going to spend an eon after we get through this psukim. I'd like to actually draw this theme out and follow what you're saying now to understand exactly what is his intent in what's going on over there.
So, going back to Kito Anahu Mevakesh, do the Mefashim say that really it was Derech Hashem that God
There's a machlokas in the Mefashim. Now, Barbanel will tell you. Barbanel will tell you as going.
Yes, I think it is. God's way.
You think there isn't a machlokas?
Well, no, I think it should be clear that God orchestrated it.
I think the ambiguity is important in this case because it's not so clear. Even if you're going to say that Shimshon, is orchestrating this with precision, you're going to run into later on times where that gets blurred in his life. So the question is going to be at which point. So the ambiguity of this is necessary to understand
but because it follows the words Kimi Hashem.
Yes, we understand.
I understand. So linguistically, you're saying that it follows on the pronoun should follow the most recent proper noun. I understand. And but in terms of parshanut, that's not necessarily the only option that exists. Sorry, Esther.
At this point, was Shimshon cognizant of his strength? Does Chazal have any other incident that would indicate that Shimshon was cognizant of his strength?
It doesn't seem like it. It doesn't seem like that. So what Esther's asking over here is, does he know about his strength at this point? And it's not clear. We're not told too much. In fact, we don't even know how old Shimshon is currently. Right, we don't even know how old Shimshon is at this point in time. But what is interesting is it sounds, maybe this is relating back to the David incident, is this may be his inauguration. This may be his realization of his strength when he meets this lion, because why would he expect to meet a lion on the way? And suddenly there's nothing else he can do but to kill it. And he realizes at this point in time his extreme strength. But we don't see any indications otherwise of earlier. We've skipped a whole stage of his earlier life. We know his birth. We know that he has Ruach HaKodesh of some sorts. And then we meet him in his marriage. So, he continues on the journey, and he doesn't tell his parents. He doesn't tell anybody, which is important for us. And finally, Vayered, again, in Pasuk Zion. Again, he goes down. Same verb. He goes down. Vayedaber la'isha, and he spoke to the woman. Vatishar be'enei Shimshon, and she was pleased to Shimshon well. Now, this is again pleasing him again. It could mean she already pleased him, but that was when he saw her. So on a physical level, and perhaps on an emotional level, he is happy to marry her.
So that's another question. How do Mefarshim explain this discrepancy?
Great. Absolutely, absolutely. I would like to. I want to address this, because this is really one of the hardest questions to deal with Shimshon. But I'd like to deal with it as a theme, stepping back from all the psukim, because we'll be able to best evaluate it once we have all the psukim together, so we can isolate each incident. So I really would like to get to exactly this point, but I want to do it with a global perspective. So he continues, Vayoshav miyamim, and he returns after a year, lakachta, to take her back, which means to say to marry her. Vayosar liros, and he went to the side to see Eis mapeles ha'aryeh, the carcass of the lion. Vihine adas dvorim begivias ha'aryeh udvash. There is a swarm of bees now living inside the carcass of the lion, and they've produced honey. Something interesting to think about is he's returning after a year. Why is it a year that he's returning after? Why is there a gap between his first ascent to Timnah and now? How do things work marriage-wise in those days?
Well, he had to wait, not a year, but he had to wait a while.
Right, a while.
He had to wait 3 months plus,
Right, so there would be a waiting period between betrothal and marriage.
Right,
so there'd be betrothal and marriage, and it was sometimes a year, or perhaps less sometimes, but at least in times the Gemara was still a year, the betrothal, we do both together. Under the chuppah, when the groom gives the bride the ring, that's the erusin, that's the betrothal, and then either being under the chuppah itself or going to the cheder yichud is the nisuin afterwards. So the two are together, but they used to have a big gap between the two of them. What's interesting, I find intriguing about this, is if we're talking about a person over here who's running after his senses and he just can't stop himself the moment he sees a lady, he's playing by the rules, right? Just to be aware of this, right? So he's playing by the rules. There's a gap here, okay? Just to put things in balance over here. So yamim is used. The yamim is sometimes used as the term of year. The example being by, if I'm not mistaken, by Rivka, it says that Eliezer wants to take Rivka away, and the brother and the father respond, Teisheva nara itano yamim o asar, wait for us yamim. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, the Gemara learns out from it that it means to say a year. That's one of the places that yamim is used to mean a year.
But when a man wants to take a woman who is captive, she has to wait only a month.
Right. So I'm pointing out over here is that's the contrast. That's the contrast. Meaning it's not like what we're seeing at the beginning of Parshas Ki Tsetse, of a person who's in battle and just can't hold himself back, and therefore there's this whole separate thing called Eishes Tefas Torah and how this works. Is that he has the restraint over here to play by the rules of how it usually works, and he's going to marry her. Okay?
They use the same terminology and timing for Megillat Esther.
So that what?
Yes, they use the same thing.
About the Yamim?
I think so.
I'll double check. I'd like to see. There's a number of places. I'd like to double check that, because there's a number of places the Yamim comes up where it means, it doesn't mean as it literally you would expect as days, but rather, I'll take a look at that. An interesting point over here is something to think about is the symbolism of the lion. Does anybody remember what? First of all, which tribe is Shimshon from? We were told this at the beginning of Perek Yud Gimel. What tribe is Shimshon from?
Gilad.
He's from Dan. Gilad is an area. Dan. He's Mishpachas Adani. He's from the family of Dan. What was Dan's blessing from Moshe Rabbeinu? At the end of the Torah, Parshas Zosa Bracha, what did Dan get as his bracha? That's Yaakov. Yaakov calls him a Nachash, which is going to be important. But Moshe Rabbeinu says, Dan Gur Ariyeh, Dan is a lion, Yizanek Minabashan. He'll be eating from the carcass. Now, it's just interesting because the next thing we have over here is the carcass of a lion, which the prodigy of Dan is... This is the word for scraping or removing the honey onto his hands. And he went and he ate it. He returns to his parents. And he gave to them to eat. He doesn't tell you that he didn't tell them that he got it from this carcass of the lion. Again,
is there a reason why he didn't tell them? Just because he didn't want them?
I've heard theories on this, but they're just not tenable to me. I heard an incredible shiur about his parents not understanding him and him being different. I think it's an anachronism.
Is it because he was modest?
There's a lot of keeping of secrets here.
So now secrets is important. I think the point of secrets is very important over here. His parents, his wife, breaking secrets, trust. That's going to be a very important theme. But the idea of saying that he's a misunderstood child, which I've heard people say, and therefore he's not telling his parents, and they're not even asking him, I don't know, I think it might be going a little further than what the text is telling us. But it's out there. There are people who suggest such things. I would like to call attention to the word again. The word used to scrape the honey is vayirdehu. This is the word. Radah is the word used when taking honey out of a hive. But it, of course, is also the same root as vayirdehu, to go down again. It's the descent. Oh. Again, the theme of...
Lirdot is also
limshal. Oh, interesting. Right, so radu bigdasayam, which is interesting. That's interesting. So that's an interesting side point. That is an interesting side point, that it had that as much as vayirdehu is going down, it also is radu. Control. Very interesting. So he returns, and I would like to just draw back to Mr. Greenland's point, which is that there's a lot of secrecy over here, and that the secrecy as a whole is going to be trust, and distrust is going to be an important theme as we're going to see throughout his life. And again, in Pasuk Yud, Vayered Avihu El Ha'isha, his father went down to the woman. It's a strange use of the word Avihu. It's going down. Vayas Sham Shimshon Mishteh. He made for Shimshon a feast, because apparently the father is the one who's in charge of organizing these things. He came Yasu Abachurim, and this is what the young man would do. As they saw him, he took for himself 30 friends, companions to be with him. Sounds like at a wedding ceremony people would have their friends around him, so he took 30. It sounds like, yeah, so we're getting ready for the chasen stish over here, but it's actually a little bit before the wedding, because Vayom Elohim Shimshon, we'll see why in terms of time, then Pasuk Yud Beis, Vayom Elohim Shimshon, Shimshon said to these friends, in inverted commas, Achuda la na lachem chida, I will make for you a riddle. Im haged tagidu asali, if you are going to be able to tell it to me, then Shivas Yemei HaMishta, for during the 7 days of the feasting, and you will find it. I will then, in response, if you find out the answer to this riddle, I will give you 30 sheets and 30 changes of clothing.
Interesting. Right? The name, what we use today, is taken from this.
The what?
The name is what we still use today. It's taken from here.
Absolutely. Well, it makes sense.
Well, it's not mentioned in the Bible before.
I'm not sure. You're right. This might be the first time that Siddim is mentioned. You might be right. This might be the first time this was mentioned. Chalifot was used by Binyamin, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yud Gimel, if you're not able to tell me, and in response, if you're not able to tell, tell me the riddle, then you owe me 30 sheets, 30 chalifas begadim, and 30 changing of clothes. They said, we're betting people, tell us the riddle. By the way, who's this better for? Who's the odds weighted against in this bet? Who stands to lose more? Is Shimshon, effectively, because he has to pay 30 and they have to pay one, right, per person, just to the odds of this bet are against him. And now comes the riddle. Vayom Elohim, me'ha'ochel yosama achal, from the eater leaves the food, ume'az, and from the strong one, yotsama tok, the sweet leaves. They were not able to tell the riddle for 3 days. Now, what is the riddle, by the way, from us? Being we have the omniscient narrator who's telling us everything. So what does the riddle mean? There's two parts to it. What do the two parts mean?
The
line is referring to which part?
Us.
From the strong one, the food comes out. So Timna, you're saying that the oichel from the eater, the food leaves, is also the lion. But just think about this for a second. The bee also is the eater and also produces food. So there might be two parts to this riddle. There might be the bee and the lion. The bee is the eater as well, producing the food, and the lion, the strong one, producing the sweetness. Okay, just to be aware of this. Now, let me ask you a question. When I make a bet with you, I set up a gamble, and I'm going to ask you a question, a riddle. What's usually the way a riddle works? The riddle works is that if you think carefully enough about it, then you can work it out, right? There's three lights and three switches in another room. How is it possible to switch on only one of them and be able to work out which switch relates to which light? A riddle. If you think hard enough about that, you could work out how that works. That's the way riddles generally work. Is it possible that they can work this out? Do they have any information that they can work this out?
No, they don't know anything.
Not
about
really, right?
Lion.
So what's unusual about this riddle is the fact that they don't really have the wherewithal, they don't have the background information to be able to deal with this. It seems a little unfair. As much as the odds are stacked against him in terms of payment, but in terms of the riddle, it's not really a fair riddle. Right? We're with that? It's not a fair riddle. So, just on a sharp level, it may be a fair riddle, because he adds an extra word over here. He says, umetzasem, you'll find it. Meaning to say, if you look around, if you start working the terrain, you may be able to find the answer to this riddle. So the Malbim points out that yes, if you look hard enough, the answer is within your reach. But, and I think this is still important, is it may be, in fact, that he is actually asking them an impossible and unfair riddle. Why? Return back to the words. Ki to'ana humavakesh. He's seeking some form of excuse or complaint against these people. What's going to happen? If he asks something which they just can't work out and they have money to lose, it's going to create disunity, at the very least. He's seeking to create disunity. Therefore, he might be asking something which purposefully is inaccessible to them. Something
but
to think
why
about.
Why would he want disunity?
Because maybe this is his way in to create havoc amongst the Plishtim.
He's not asking the Plishtim, he's asking his friends.
No, he chose out of the Plishtim 30. These Mireim come from the Plishtim. Yeah, he comes down to Timna, and these Mireim. It's going to be clear from the continuation that these people are not his buddies from childhood. It's going to be clear that these are people who are among the Plishtim. Even though, as you're right, it doesn't say specifically, but it says that when they saw him, meaning the people in the city, see him. He chooses them as friends. They're not his friends. He chooses them as friends. It'll be clear from the continuation that these are not his friends. They're not going to be people who are acting as friends. What was that?
This was his setup.
It seems.
Conquer.
It seems, or at least to create some form of disunity at this point in time.
Right. But he went and married.
Maybe that's for the same reason.
I'm just wondering.
Maybe the marrying in the first place is to be able to get this. Maybe
to get close enough
to be able to create this discord. Worth thinking about. There's just the inner workings of what's going on over here. Finally, and by the way, just an interesting thing. If you're talking about as well the significance of using this chida, this riddle with them. He's talking about a very powerful beast which is now slain, and outside of it is something more subtle and sweet coming out of it. who controls the nation of Israel is the power that be is the Plishtim, the coastal plain Philistines. Perhaps some part of the symbolism over here is from the power out will come sweetness, out will come something else. There's salvation to be found even within the power. Okay, that's just in terms of what also a little bit of a symbolistic attack on them as well. And, of course, it comes 3 days and they cannot find the answer to the riddle because there's no way for them to really find this. And, Vayhi bayam ashlishi, ashvi'i, on the seventh day, Vayamru ele eshes shimshon, pati es isheich v'yaged lonu es achida. Seduce your husband and he will tell us the riddle. Pen nisrof osach ves beis avich. Lest we burn you and your father's house by ash and fire, haliyar shenu krosem lanu halo. Have you called us here to impoverish us, to take us away? The word comes from rash, haliyar shenu. Are you taking? Are you trying to make us impoverished by having to pay this bet to him? So they threaten her. Why do they wait until the seventh day? So just a background over here is there is a 14-day feast, 7 days before the wedding, 7 days after the wedding. He said to them, you have until the seventh day of the post-wedding feast, meaning you have 14 days to work this out. 3 days in, they're stumped. They can't work it out. They wait to the seventh day, which means the middle of the bet, which is the wedding day, to ask her why, because now she's in the position to seduce him. Right? Now they're using her when they can use her, when she gets married to him, as the tool against him on threat of death. Okay? Remember,
why 14 days, though?
That 7 beforehand and 7 afterwards. That was the custom.
What? That's not how long they celebrate.
That's one long party, right? So 7 days before, 7 days afterwards. In the middle of it, they're using his wife now. Vatefk eshes Shimshon alav, and now as his wife, she cries to him. Vatame raksane sani velo avtani, you hate me, you don't love me. Hachida chadata livnei ami, you told the chida to my people. Again, here it becomes more clear, just that he's referring to the Plishtim. You made this chida, this mirror, this riddle to my people. V'lila higarata, you didn't even tell me. V'yomer lo, and he said to her, Hinei alo v'ilu mila lo higarati. V'loch agid, I didn't tell my parents, I'm going to tell you. I don't know if this is so consoling for a newlywed woman to hear, right? Don't worry, my mother doesn't know. But I don't know if that's the most consoling thing. But again, we just hit upon the theme of secrecy and trust. He doesn't trust. It doesn't seem like he's even trust his parents with it, and so therefore he uses that as a reason or leverage for her not to know. Maybe they can't know. Maybe what he's trying to do is so it's necessary to be secret. Maybe. Vatev golav shivas yamim, and she cries for 7 days. These are the 7 days post wedding until the deadline. Asher ayalo hem amishter, these are the 7 days of feasting. Vayi bayom ashvi, on the seventh day, vayaged lo, ki hitzikaso, suhu, vayaged hachida livnei amo. So he told her, because she pressed him sore, they say over here. I mean, to say she obviously put a lot of pressure on him. She obviously delivers the entire chida to her people. Vayamru lo, and she ha'ir. By the way, just something interesting. If you're going to argue that Shimshon really is, in a certain sense, weak when it comes to women, right? When he sees a woman, he goes and wants to marry her. It's going to happen 3 times over, right? So, and you're going to argue that he just doesn't have a control, which is perhaps some of the Mepharshim do say that. It's interesting that his Achilles heel is the same thing, right? You notice that the way his downfall is always going to be by over-trusting or trusting or falling for a woman and therefore losing his secret. Something just to be aware of if you're going to see that as thematic. But it seems like that's always his downfall, his overtrust. And of course, they triumphantly walk in Pasuk Yudches, and the people of the city walk in, on the seventh day, but Terem Yavoa Charsa, before the sun sets. Charsa is used, the word Cheres is used as sun in Sefer Yoshua, it's a word sometimes used to describe the sun. Mama Sok Midvash, you know, we were just thinking, what could be sweeter than honey? Uma'az me'ari, and what could be stronger or stronger than a lion? Meaning, like, do you think this is it, Shimshon? Obviously, they're asking in a very innocent way because they don't want to insinuate against his wife. Vayom Elohim, and he responds to them, Lulei charashtem be'eglasi. If you had not plowed with my calf, referring to his wife, he's saying, if you had not used my wife or abused her. Then, you would not have Same word, found, meaning you wouldn't have found my riddle or investigated.
So now, not a compliment
okay, this is not a compliment over here, but just something to think about is on the one hand, you're saying you may have tried to get the secret out of her. On the other hand, there might be a deeper insinuation over here. He may be accusing them of incest. He may be saying that there's incest, there's a prior relationship going on over here, and therefore, that's maybe why she has loyalties to you more than me. Okay, that might be part of the imagery that he's using over here. And now, what's interesting over here is this is actually proved in a few moments. Vatitzach alav ruach Hashem, and the spirit of Hashem came mightily upon him. This is a phrase we're going to see occurring four times throughout the life of Shimshon. You're going to have to pay attention where it occurs. Vayered Ashkelon, he went to the city of Ashkelon, which is a Philistine city. Today it's in the territory of Israel, but the whole coastal plain along where Gaza is now is in the hands of Philistine. He goes to Ashkelon. Vayach mehem shloshim esh, he kills 30 people. Vayikach es chalitzasam, he takes their spoils. Vayitena chalifos lemagidei hachida, and he gives their shirts to the people who told him the riddle. Meaning innocently, well, I got you 30 shirts. Vayicharapo vayal beis aviv. In anger, he then returned to his father's house because of being betrayed. Must have been expensive because they were worried about having to pay him, and he went and killed him. Now, do you see something interesting over here?
Yeah.
Is he justified, Labriot? Is he justified in killing those people?
No.
Meaning, from a Philistine perspective,
no.
Is he justified?
They had nothing to do with it.
No.
Those people didn't have anything to do with it. But in terms of betrayal. In terms of betrayal,
she betrayed them,
and they threatened her. So, in a certain sense, if you're the town's elder at this point in time, and people come to you and say he killed those people, and you said, well, tell me the whole story. As much as he was definitely very violent, there's room to hear at least that there was a reason that he was doing this, which is important now. This is important because what he's doing, he's setting up a system, he's setting up a cycle over here. Of justified killing. Just to think about this.
On the other hand, they were the police to him, and they were oppressing him. So
of course, but it might be that he needs to do this.
But it wasn't a war. It was just...
That's it. You see,
there wasn't a war.
He has to be careful.
We're
going to have to get this in the Eon, why it's necessary to do it this way. But he's created a pretense that he's been insulted and betrayed now, which is now justifies something. He may be overdoing it, but he's now justified himself to some degree in this, and it gets further. And his wife then was to his friend who had been his friend.
So wait a minute, how long was he married then?
Well, this is obviously 7 days, and now he returns to his father's house in anger. And when he returns, she gets married to or gets married
so
or has a relationship.
Married 2 weeks, are you saying?
1 week. Right? Well, he's been betrayed. He's been betrayed by her. He returns in anger. He doesn't divorce her. He returns in anger to have a time out, time to cool down. In the meantime, his wife now goes to one of the friends, which, by the way, now reflects back on his insinuation. Whose loyalty is she? Who is she really loyal to, right? That's perhaps the question. Was this a new relationship or was this an old relationship? Right? So that's the question we have over here. Okay, that's round one. But the circle widens. Let's try to get a little bit further to get into the movement of this. This is in Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Aleph. Vayehimi yamim b'meket tzirchitim. It was in the days during the harvest of wheat. Okay, so we're talking about around about right May, June, July time. Vayifkod Shimshon is ishto bigdi izim. So Shimshon came down to visit his wife. After being betrayed, he went back in anger. Now he's coming back to return with a goat to bring her a meal. Vayomer avo el ishti achadra. Let me enter the room where my wife is. V'lenasano avia lavo. And her father didn't allow him to enter. Why? Because she's married. She has a relationship with somebody else. Vayomer avia, and he says, don't worry. He says, Amara marti kisano sanesi vet nena lemere echa. I thought that you hated her, so obviously the relationship was off, the wedding's off, so I gave it to somebody else. But don't worry, she's got a younger sister who's much nicer than her. You marry her, everything will be all right. Right? So trying to get out of the problem. Part of the part part of being younger as well is maybe she's also less cunning and subversive, and meaning everything will be fine. This will, there's not going to be any problems in this relationship from now onwards. Vayomelam Shimshon, Nikesi hapam miplishtim. I am clean. I am clean, literally, or from what I'm about to do against the plishtim. Ki oseh ani imam ra'ah. I'm going to do against them evil. So now, not only has there been betrayal in terms of the riddle, but there's been betrayal in terms of his marriage. Okay? So the second betrayal now is going to justify something else. And what's the words he uses in Nikesi? I've been cleaned. Meaning, I'm owed a debt, so I can use that as a finding a debt. Again, it's the same pattern. Do you see that? He's finding a toana, a complaint, and he's using that now to justify the next action. So what does he do? Vayelech Shimshon vayilkod shlosh meos shalem. He takes 300 foxen. Foxes or foxen? Foxes. What are you saying?
Foxes. Right? You say foxen?
I was just wondering if it should follow the oxen, right?
No.
Anyway, English is such a complicated language.
In South Africa, they say foxen.
No, I was just being. I was just being creative.
With such a straight face.
Yeah, absolutely. How do they don't even translate it like that? I would expect the old English to at least help us out. And anyway, vayikach lapidim, takes torches of fire. Vayifen zanovel zanov. He ties them tail to tail. And he puts the lapid, the flame, between the two of them. Okay, so what's going to happen, obviously? What's going to be the result?
They're
both going to try to get away from each other because the fire is behind them.
No, but they're running
and
different
they're running different directions, so they're going to keep on going round in circles or falling over each other. In the meantime, as you said, the fire is going to catch everything around them. Very cruel thing. But if you think about it, let's think about this this imagery over here. Is first of all, a fox is of animals is always given what attribute to give a fox?
Sly
and cunning, right? So part of the attribute of his attack back against the plishtim is were you so honest with me? Meaning, when you married this woman to me and we played fair grounds on this riddle, were you being honest with me? Were you giving me the truth, suggesting as if you found this riddle, now taking her away and marrying somebody else? He's superimposing the fox cunning on and the slyness on the plishtim. He feels that's what's been done to him. That's perhaps what he's doing to them. But also another thing to think about is here we have two creatures inextricably linked, but not able but trying to get away from each other. In a certain sense, this might be imagery of adultery in a certain sense. Right? You have over here two people married, but somebody's trying to get away from which is an eternal bond in a certain sense. Right? There's this bond which somebody's trying to break away from but can't get away from really. But not supposed to get away from.
Right, but she already.
That's perhaps again another imagery over here. What is showing when they see this happening? When they're about to see what happens, what do they think? That's what he's trying. There's messages over here which is putting in motion. Sorry, what are you saying?
When it says in pasuk kaf v'tehila mere'eu, does it admit that she left him?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So why did he come again to her?
He didn't know this.
He's in his father's house.
And then his father was culpable for that too, because her father.
Her father, exactly.
Her father.
She is coming back down to her father now, and so you're right. Her father and her are culpable, and they're going to suffer for it. But at this point in time, yes, they should suffer. One more pasuk, and then we'll hold it for today. That's Vayaver Eish Balapidim Vayashalach Bakomos Plishtim. And he sent them among the fields of the plishtim. Now, of course, it is significant that it is the time of harvest, because this is the time when all the grain is dry and standing in the field. So any fire is going to set alight anything in the field. Vayaver migadish ad kamar, it burnt from the haystacks to the standing grain ad kerem zayis until the vineyards and the olives. Okay, just to get this closing over here. Vayamru plishtim, mi asa zos, who did this? Vayamru Shimshon, ha-chasan ha-timni. And they said, it must be Shimshon, the son-in-law of the Timni, of the person from Timnasa. Ki lokach es ishto, because they took his wife, vayidno le-mire'u, and this father gave his daughter to somebody else. Vayalu plishtim, vayisrifu asa ves av yoba esh. And they came and they burnt him, her father, in fire, meaning to say that they because of Shimshon's repercussion, which he knew he was justified in, they therefore killed them in order to appease Shimshon's anger. What's ironic, of course, is What did they say to what would they say to her when they wanted to get the riddle out of her? They said, "If you don't tell us, we'll burn you." It's just the irony is, in the end of the day, they do burn her, but because of her betrayal of Shimshon when they were asking her to betray Shimshon. So it's just fascinating. It's just fascinating. The Pelishtim originally threatened to kill her in fire. They kill her in fire because she betrayed Shimshon when they were originally asking her to betray Shimshon. Just the circles over here. And this is going to open for a new circle of violence. Okay, so what the pattern we're going to see over here, and this, I apologize for going so fast, but I'd like to just get through the major material here, is we're going to see a widening circle of violence. Okay, revenge, built on revenge, built on revenge. Okay, that's the circles that we're going to be seeing throughout the Shimshon story, which we're going to have to try to take a look at and see the significance and why he needed to do it this way, and if he was acting based on his own personal motives or the needs of the nation of Israel as a whole.